Welcome to the Business for Good podcast,
a show where we, Paul Shapiro and Tony Okamoto,
spotlight companies making money by helping solve some of the world's most pressing problems.
Welcome, listeners, and we're so sorry for the delay in releasing this episode. We've been doing quite a lot lately, from planning our wedding, which will happen right about the time this episode comes out, to Paul doing a book tour in Europe for the release of his new book there, to me preparing for my upcoming book tour when my book comes out in early May.
Indeed, it has been a busy time, but we got a lot of good feedback on the last episode with Bob Langert from McDonald's, and we've got a great one for you here too. In fact, it's really a two-for-one episode, since actually it's back-to-back interviews with two impressive folks from a cool company called Ecovative. First, we chat with their CEO, Evan Bayer, and then with their research scientist and a project lead there, Jesse Bia Kaplan, who each offer different perspectives, one from the business side and one from the science side.
These folks are making amazing and versatile materials they say could solve serious environmental problems. But before we kick it off, let's just lay the groundwork for a moment.
So think about all the things that we do with plants. There's such a huge diversity of them, from peas to trees, that we eat them, we use them to make clothing, to construct our homes, to make medicines, and more. Well, now consider that there are more species of fungi than there are of plants. Actually, there are many, many times more species of fungi than there are plants. And in fact, fungi are evolutionarily more closely related to animals than to plants, than we are to plants, that is. Yet, our knowledge of a huge portion of fungal species is pretty much non-existent.
In fact, just saying the word fungal sounds so gross to me, because so often when you think of the word fungus, you think of something you're trying to get rid of.
Well, it's time for fungi to get a reputational makeover. Sure, we know shiitakes and white button mushrooms are fungi and we love them.
Speak for yourself, I hate eating mushrooms.
True, Tony does hate mushrooms, but I love them, and I bet a lot of listeners are quite happy to eat fungi, like truffles, for example. But only about 10% of fungi actually produce mushrooms, which are the fruiting body of those particular species. You may know that some medicines, like penicillin, are created from fungi, but companies like Ecovative are just starting to peer into what we can do with our fungal friends to help right some of the environmental wrongs humanity has been committing.
So with that, we'll let Eben and Jesse tell you their company's story. Welcome, Evan. Thanks for coming on the show with us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, Evan. So let's just get started. I watched your TED Talk, which was really great, and I highly recommend it. And you'll see actually that your colleague, Jesse, later in the interview recommends it as well. Let me just ask you first, what is the problem with materials today? So if people haven't watched your talk, like, what's the problem with the packing materials that we use?
The primary problem I perceive with most plastics, and particularly single-use plastics, like you find in packaging, is not necessarily the extraction side, so the removing of oil and the processing, though that can be energy intensive and kind of nasty. It's really the end of life issues. So these products are often designed to operate for humans on the matter of hours or weeks, but they persist in the natural environment almost indefinitely. And we've only had them in bulk for about 50 years, but you're already starting to see them bioaccumulate in the ocean, in small organisms, and finding their way into the bodies of larger mammals. And so we're essentially pumping the earth full of this polymer that it can't do anything with. And it's like kind of clogging up the earth's whole ecosystem, kind of like cholesterol almost.
I read that it was something like a quarter of all of the waste in landfills is coming from packing materials. Is that right?
I have seen the same statistic. You have to be careful on those because I believe that's by volume, which is an accurate measurement, but there is compaction that eventually occurs.
Interesting. So in the last interview, we interviewed a former vice president at McDonald's, Bob Langert, and he was instrumental in McDonald's decision decades ago to stop using polystyrene clamshell containers for their sandwiches and to move to paper instead. And he talked about how while he's glad that they did it because he thinks it was a consumer problem, he is not so sure that polystyrene was worse for the environment because it's all going into a landfill where it is airtight. It's not going to decompose anyway. And so even though paper is compostable, it's going to landfill anyway. And since paper is much heavier than styrofoam, it takes a lot more energy to transport it all around the country and so on. So how would you respond to that? And he's not defending polystyrene. He was just expressing some questions about whether paper is any better. And I know you're a fan of using mycelium, which we'll get into, but which do you think is better for the environment, using paper or using styrofoam?
You know, this is a really great point because the honest answer is it depends. And it depends on what you're measuring and what you care about. So I think that the intellectual answer, which is in theory, if 100% of these materials could be collected and they both ended up in a landfill, the LCA is in favor of potentially using a plastic foam. The issue that Ecovative is responding to and that I personally respond to, and I think everyone can see these days, is not everything finds its way into a landfill. If it did, you wouldn't see plastic bags in our national forests. You wouldn't see styrofoam containers on the beach, right? You wouldn't go to the park and see plastic crap everywhere. So the answer is you can't rely on 6 billion or 7 billion or 8 billion individual humans to put every piece of plastic in the trash, because that's a tremendous amount of social change we'll never succeed at. What we can do is create materials that if they end up in a landfill, it's okay. If they end up in a municipal composting site, it could be a local benefit. And if for some reason they blow out of your garbage can or you're recklessly throw them out of your car on the highway, they actually improve the natural ecosystem where you land. And that's how every other technology on Earth operated until 1950 or so.
Let's talk a little bit about Ecovative. This is a company founded to address sustainability problems. When did you start it and how has the company grown since then?
So I started Ecovative in 2007 with a pretty clear goal of using mycelium technology to address single-use plastic pollution. And that led to the creation of our first product line, Mushroom Packaging, which was built around a mycelium composite platform, which has many applications in, I would say, high-volume, lower-priced commodity markets like packaging, building construction, design and interiors. But since then, we've grown into a pretty robust biofabrication platform. So that's using biology to grow materials. And most recently, we've actually started using this technology to address some of the challenges we see in animal agriculture. First launching a leather and more recently focusing on food.
So Evan, when you say launching a leather, is this like a faux leather that is made out of mycelium or is it actual leather that is like cattle collagen, but that is grown on mycelium?
It is molecularly different than animal-based leather in that it does not have collagen as a backbone. It uses chitin as a backbone, which is the primary cell wall constituent to leather. In terms of its look and feel and performance, it benchmarks extremely close to conventional leathers, like a sheepskin leather. And one of the reasons, even though it's chemically different, that it possesses many of the same properties you'd find in a fine leather is because it's grown into a whole sheet, just like skin is grown in a whole sheet.
Interesting. And are you selling this leather right now?
We've exclusively partnered with Vault Threads, who is commercializing that and has done collaborations with Stella McCartney, as well as designing some of their own products.
Okay, cool. So, you know, we talk with Jesse in a little bit later in this interview about MycoFlex, this material that you guys are pioneering made out of mycelium. But from our understanding, it is not yet on the market. It sounds like your leather is not yet on the market either. Why don't you tell us, Evan, you know, you guys have been around for 12 years. What are you selling now and how is it going?
I would just say you actually can order the leather now. The bags are available on Vault's website.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, I appreciate the correction.
And we'll include those in the show notes.
Cool. Right now, you can order from our sister site, mushroompackaging.com. You can order packaging. We have a design build service so people can get a quote on a molded packaging shape. In about a week, we'll get you a design and a render. And if you like it, in 4 weeks, you can have a grown prototype. We're particularly competitive in this section of the packaging market, particularly for direct-to-consumer brands that may be starting with relatively low volumes, but aspirations to grow. We're an extremely low-cost provider at the low volume, and we compete pretty well up to middle volumes, say like 500,000 units per year. You can also buy large sheets of mycelium materials from us. So you can buy 4x4-foot panels for acoustics, design interiors, and other applications. But primarily what we sell is services and know-how. So our goal on the composite side is to teach others around the world how to use this platform and build things for their own local markets. And we're just starting to do that effectively in Europe, and we're hoping to do that worldwide.
I'm curious, how does your packing material compare to styrofoam?
Well, like styrofoam, we can mold our material into a bunch of different geometries. That makes it really great for both protection as well as display applications. Unlike styrofoam, it's grown over a 7-day process. That means it's grown at room temperature and low-cost reusable tooling. That makes the tooling relatively inexpensive on lower volumes. And unlike styrofoam, it's totally home compostable. So when you're done using it, you can put it in your garden and it'll break down in 30 to 60 days.
It seems like such a simple idea, or at least you're a good communicator and make it seem so. Do you have patents on this, or how do you protect yourself against competitors who might come and try to do the same thing?
Believe it or not, this is, I believe, one of those ideas that seems simpler in retrospect. And we actually have a monopoly on mycelium composites in 30 countries. And we have 38 patents worldwide because we were the creator of this field. We were the first folks to look at fungal mycelium and say, could you turn this into a structural material? With that said, we broadly license our patents. If you go on our website as a student or a designer for $10, you can get a bag of ready-to-grow material, and that gives you a license to make up to 2 tons of whatever you want. So we really don't want to use these to prevent people from making stuff.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. So how do your investors feel about that, that you're essentially open sourcing some of your patents?
You know, it's actually been a hurdle. We started, and this has been a journey for me, we started as very closed and proprietary. And we did some early exclusive licensing, particularly to large packaging companies early on. And truthfully, that was critical. It helped us standardize the product, develop the manufacturing equipment, and get this into the market. But as we look out for the next 10 or 15 year life of our patent, we believe that it's in the world's best interest and in our best interest, frankly, to have as many people building with mycelium as possible. So we actually want to use, at least in the composite ecosystem, RIP as a way to keep the field more open, not more closed. And I think I've convinced the board at most levels.
So, you know, you said you have a monopoly. Obviously, there are other companies that are using mycelium for various things. You've got Corn, that's Q-U-O-R-N, in the UK making plant-based meats, or I guess they're not plants, but they're fungal-based meats. You have Mycotechnology, which I know is doing some, I think some mycelium protein powders, I think is what they're doing. Are there other types of mycelial companies out there that are doing anything remotely similar to what Ecovative is up to?
The distinction for what we do is we actually grow the mycelium into self-supporting structures. So in the case of our packaging, that means growing mycelium through and around things like hemp fibers to bind them together, which no one else is doing, or they're doing it under license from us. And in the food space, we're actually growing self-supporting pure mycelium structures, kind of like a mushroom, but in these long industrial format sheets. And in both cases, we are still the only ones doing that. But there are lots of companies discovering the power of fungi in general. And there are hundreds of different ways you could apply mycelium that don't necessarily involve growing structure that have great utility for the planet.
Oh, that's cool. So, Evan, let me just ask you, you know, if there's somebody listening to the show and they're like, oh, I hate using styrofoam peanuts, I want to use Ecovative's mycelium instead, can they as an individual order from you, or do you only sell to companies?
So packaging is, by definition, usually a B2B thing in that, you know, you're typically not sending something to your grandmother, you're sending one of many. But we have standard shapes on our packaging site if you want to get a corner block or a wine shipper or a cooler. And if you're doing a small run of something, we have sort of standardized packaging for things like mason jars. So, you know, if you're a big pickling fan and you want to give everyone in your family a jar of pickles at Christmas, you might check those out.
Okay, very good. So the company's been around for 12 years. You've grown substantially. Has this been through raising venture capital funding, angel funding? Like, how much money have you guys raised, and how are you doing?
We're doing good. We've raised a limited amount of money in comparison to some of our peers in the biomaterials and biofabricated space. So we've raised about $30 million over our 13-year lifespan, most of that prior to 2013. And last couple of years have mostly been sort of steady state on our own commercial business. And we've also created and shipped literally millions of pounds of bio-based product into the world. And so I'm tremendously proud of our accomplishments relative to capital raised.
How many people work for your company?
Oh, we're somewhere between 45 and 50 people.
And you had mentioned, Evan, that you guys have a new cultured meat program that you're working on. So you're not only making leather, but you want to be branching out into the food space as well. Tell us why what you're doing is different from the other companies that are trying to culture animal cells to make real meat without having to raise and slaughter animals.
So the core insight around our work in the cultured meat space is that folks are getting pretty good at growing different cells, bovine, avian, et cetera, in the lab, but they only grow them in sheets or in liquid bioreactors. And what makes meat an amazing biomaterial that people want to consume is usually the way it assembles itself into a piece of muscle. And so we see that the missing ingredient to do that is structure. You need something you adhere those cells to, and that structure usually helps the cells communicate and differentiate into the appropriate tissue types. And what we discovered is our lightweight, porous, pure mycelium serves as an ideal scaffolding to actually grow these cells. So we're actually not growing the cells at all at Ecovative. We're working with leading academic labs like the Pelling Lab, as well as providing the scaffolding to lots of the different newcomers in the space to use as a structure ingredient for their own products.
And are any of the for-profit startups using it right now?
Yes.
Of course you can't do everything, but you believe mycelium has nearly infinite capacities to help save the planet. Are there mycelium-related company ideas you want to suggest to our listeners that they should investigate starting for their own companies?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. So I think adjacent to stuff we do, I believe there's an unmet opportunity in remediation, using mycelium to clean up or break down pollutions and contaminants. A fair amount of research been done on it, but it doesn't seem like anyone's commercialized a business in that sector. And then, of course, as I mentioned at the start, we invite people to build around the composite platform, whether it's a business in interiors, acoustical panels, or even opening your own molded shapes packaging site somewhere in the U.S.
I saw a tweet from Paul Stamets, the mycologist, on Twitter last week where he was promoting this article on BBC about mycelium. And one of the claims in the article was that there are a couple of mycelial species that have been documented to actually be able to break down plastic. Are you familiar with that? And what do you think about that as a company idea? Maybe somebody who could offer municipalities a way to break down their plastic using mycelium first.
I think it's really exciting. And, you know, if you look at the history of how fungi appeared on planet Earth, they evolved to break down the original plastics, which was the lignin found in trees. And in fact, many of our coal deposits that we now extract came from these swamps that built up hundreds and hundreds of meters of undigestible lignin. And it was actually becoming a problem. We were sucking so much carbon out of the atmosphere that you'd have atmospheric fires, if you can believe it. Lightning would strike and the air would catch on fire. And fungi came along and figured out how to break down these complex hydrocarbon chains like lignin. And that became one of our nature's recycling systems. And so it doesn't surprise me that within nature's toolkits, the enzymes are there or accessible through one or two evolutionary leaps to break down plastics. And I think it's a wonderful idea, though I would point out that where we most need those enzymes is in places like the ocean, where there's billions and billions of plastic microparticles that are just distributed and are impossible to collect.
There's some pretty interesting company ideas for collecting all of those microplastics that are in the oceans. Although I guess if an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure, then maybe applying some mycelium to plastic before it could ever reach the ocean could be a pretty interesting company idea.
For sure. For sure.
Cool. Well, Evan, we really appreciate you taking time to chat with us. It's been great talking with you and with Jesse, and we are rooting for your success, and we're really impressed by everything that you're doing.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the fun questions.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with their CEO, Evan. And now we also did a really great interview with Ecovative's research scientist, Jesse Bia Kaplan. Here you go.
Jesse Kaplan Bia, welcome to the Business for Good podcast.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful having a chance to talk with you.
Thanks for joining us on the show today. So you're in your late 20s, yet you're a scientist overseeing a critical project for one of the most innovative startups out there. First, congratulations. And second, how did you get here? Tell us all about your background. Did you always want to be a scientist?
That's a great question. I would say that yes, I always did want to be a scientist, whether I called it that name or not in my head. But ever since I was little, I have been fascinated by the natural world and wanting to understand why. And I think that a big part of being a scientist is the curiosity and the desire to understand the why and the particular avenue with which you pursue that. So my background actually was very different than what I'm doing now, though I think it's been very helpful. I actually originally was very interested in ethology, which is animal behavior, and spent quite a bit of time focusing my energy on really understanding patterns of behavior and the kind of research that goes into that. And in doing so, I very quickly realized that I love playing with animals much more than I like to sit and write about them. So I was like, okay, maybe not that path. And then from there, I moved into ecology, which was really where definitely I think the work I do now was most relevant. But aquatic ecology really fascinated me, as well as kind of conservation biology. And that's what I spent the majority... That's kind of what I was interested in, focused in on at school. So I was focusing in on actually these things called eundolithic cyanobacteria that spend their time living on and within the shells of snails. And that's really what started to get me excited about this kind of concept, which I can later talk about, which is bioadaption. Just because on learning about cyanobacteria, I was just fascinated by like just the wealth and extent of what these organisms can do. And so quickly went down that rabbit hole of not just only what they are as an organism, but kind of the ways that we could potentially functionalize them to make the world a better place, or I should say make the world a cleaner and more sustainable place. And that kind of is what ultimately led me to Ecovative. So that's a really brief history in kind of how I got to where I am.
Where did you go to school and what exactly did you study?
Yep. So I went to school at a place in central Pennsylvania called Juniata College. And my focus was environmental and also philosophy as my minor. So I've always been interested in the sciences, but I like the big picture as well.
That's really cool, Jesse. When I was growing up, I too loved animals, as I still do as a grown up. And you know, when you're a kid and you love animals, people tell you that you should become a veterinarian. So I always thought I wanted to be a vet. And then I found out just how much you had to do to become a veterinarian, and it became less interesting to me. And that's when I heard about ethology. And my parents actually sent me to a science summer camp after fifth grade, where I went and studied these prairie dogs out in Colorado. It was a really cool experience. And at that point, I too thought I wanted to become an ethologist, and then eventually thought that maybe I could do something else for animals with my career, aside from observing their behavior and documenting it. Although I do think that's pretty valuable. But that's pretty cool that you two had ethological aspirations as a kid.
All right, Jesse, for people who don't have any background, let's just start with the basics. What's mycelium?
I like to explain this kind of using a tree analogy. So when you think about a mushroom, which is what is above the surface of the ground or coming out of a tree, below that is this huge body and network, and that's what we call mycelium. And so mycelium really is what makes up fungi as the organism. And so it's a similar thing. If mycelium would be like what a tree is, whereas a mushroom is like the banana on that tree or the apple on that tree. So that's why we call like a mushroom is called a fruiting body, and mycelium is the network or the body of that organism.
So just for people who are interested in the etymology of it, so myco meaning mushroom and rhizal meaning related to roots, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty, yeah.
So you all are growing mycelium, and you lead this project at a startup called Ecovative Design, where you are growing mycelium. And what are you growing these mushroom roots into, Jesse?
So we use a variety of different, what we call substrates, which can be anything like an agricultural waste. It can be a specific type of nutritional, basically it's the organism's food. So that provides a matrix at the same time. So we will select, for example, something like wheat straw, and we might add some additional nutritional supplements, and that we then inoculate with our organism and allow it to grow over a certain period of time. And then depending on what we want to elicit within, or what kind of like behaviors and type of growth that we want to elicit, we'll incubate or grow it under certain conditions.
And what are you trying to grow? Like, what is it that you are making with this material that you call MycoFlex?
So with MycoFlex specifically, what's amazing about MycoFlex is that what we are trying to do is grow a pure mycelial mat. And what that means is that we are independent of the substrate that the organism is growing within. We are getting growth that is completely independent of that is growing outside of the matrix. And therefore, we end up with this pure mycelial piece of material. But as I was explaining before, it's not a mushroom. It's not a fruiting body. It is truly the vegetative or mycelial like growth that we are eliciting. And what's kind of amazing about that is there's a lot of potential there for it to kind of be made into a lot of different applications.
What's the most common thing you're making with it?
So right now we are exploring a variety of different possible applications and have also previously explored them. So one of the things that I was working on with my team was the development of Mylo with Bolt. So it is a purely mycelial textile that is similar to leather and has a similar feel like that, but obviously does not have any animal product in it. Another avenue that we're exploring also is as a scaffold or a structure to apply in the edibles arena for the purpose of making mycelium-based meat alternatives.
I was looking online at a shoe that was made from the material, and I was so amazed. Can you tell us a little bit more about how we could turn that into clothes that we wear?
So one of the, like I said, one of the amazing things about this particular platform, what's really fascinating about this is its structure. So we're not, it's not like we're just synthesizing components of an organism. We're actually working with the organism and leveraging the organism's ability to grow structure. So that means that under certain conditions, we can elicit very different behaviors and so therefore very different structures. So for example, if we want a more foam-like material, like you would see in the shoe, we can work to create the right conditions to grow towards a particular density or lofty or a little bit more closed, and then be able to test this material to see how it performs as compared to the current, what's currently used within the industry. So one really lovely property is that it actually does a really good job insulating. So in like a clothing application, for example, an alternative that you'd be able to do would be something like an insulating foam within like gloves, for example, would be one like, you know, off the cuff thing that I could imagine. But yeah, there's a variety of different ways that could be applied.
So the material is compostable. How do you make it so that the clothes don't break down over time?
I think these are things that we're testing out now. And so I think that's actually a major challenge of any company that is focused on trying to retain that kind of durability while also still being compostable. So one of the things like I can kind of explain for at least Milo is if you didn't tan, for example, leather, you wouldn't end up with a very long-lasting material. So there's ways that you can theoretically post-process this using, you know, conscious practices to help kind of retain or enhance its natural durability and remove some of the more like, weaker components of it that kind of allow it, or I should say, provide opportunity for it to break down in other fashions.
So Jesse, if you took leather, like you said, and if I had a leather wristwatch and it hadn't been tanned, it would eventually just rot on my wrist. But when you tan it, it pretty much makes it so it's not going to biodegrade.
Exactly.
So obviously the mycelium that you're growing is biodegradable, but if you tan it, is that still so? Or will it eventually, if I had a Mycoflex wristwatch, what stops it from rotting on my wrist eventually?
Well, it just slows the process down, right? Like, so there's like differences, like when you think about compostability too, it's like, if you just take some paper and just kind of leave it out on a table, it's going to maintain. If you take paper and you break it up into little pieces and you put it into a compost bin, then you're going to start to see organisms working to break down that structure. It's the kind of the same concept. What we are actively though trying to avoid is to add anything like plastics, any kind of polyurethanes that would prevent the ability to actually make it compostable. So it's a challenge, definitely a challenge, and definitely an area that we are continuing to explore and grow. Like I would not say that we have all the solutions yet, but something we're working towards since that is such important, I'd say it's a pretty important value.
So basically it's not going to rot on my wrist, but if I buried it, it might indeed biodegrade then.
Bingo.
As you just mentioned, you haven't yet commercialized Mycoflex, but you have commercialized a number of things. So tell us about what is Ecovative Design now selling on the market that is made from mycelium, and why is it better than the products that it is seeking to displace in the market?
So one of the things that we do sell now is our packaging, and it is a particular type of packaging. It's called blocking and bracing. It's within molded shapes. So what is wonderful about this particular application and this material is that it is four other molded shape style packaging that you could use for blocking and bracing. It's cost competitive. And because this is a more premium type of packaging, one of the things that the company does is they work really hard to figure out exactly what the needs of the customer are. So effectively, the goal is basically for you not to be able to tell that there's much of a difference between what our material and any other kind of molded shape packaging. The advantage being, of course, is that since this is a short-term use item, at the end of it, the customers that are receiving this packaging can take it, break it up, and toss in their own, you know, compost in the backyard.
Wow, that's really cool. So you can take, if I received a package that used, you know, as some type of filler in the package, the Ecovative product, then I could just take that instead of putting it in the trash, I could just throw it in my backyard and it'll biodegrade.
Yeah, break it up. I'd say you could throw it in your compost. But if you broke it up and tossed it into, I only make that distinction is because like a compost creates a nice environment similar to like the forest floor, for example, where you have lots of friendly little microorganisms and a community there that is happy to munch away. Whereas not everyone's backyard will have those depending on what they apply to their yard.
You say Ecovative is premium packaging, but you also say it's cost competitive. What's premium about it if it's not more expensive?
It's just the type of packaging. That's what, if you kind of look into the industry, it's molded shape is kind of, molded shape packaging is a specific thing.
And you've said in other interviews that the more you learned about mycelium, the more your mind was blown. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, completely. Yeah. So like I said, I didn't start originally with working with fungi. And I kind of got there through cyanobacteria. And so when I entered the world of fungi, I should also explain to you, like, you know, when fungi is like, I actually like looked into my old textbook just to see for my own sake. It was about 2.5 pages on an entire kingdom in my intro to bio textbook. So from when I was in school, I mean, it's not really an area that surprisingly gets a lot of attention in kind of the mainstream biological education. And so I entered this world and first of all, these organisms are absolutely astounding in what they're able to do. And from someone who is very interested in behavior, they really present really unique opportunity when it comes to a microorganism, which is in the fact that like, so I work with filamentous, you know, fungi. So there is structure. There's a lot of structure that's observable to the human eye and that you're creating this very large body of mycelium, mycelial mat.
Hey, Jesse, just for people who don't know what filamentous is, what is filamentous mycelium?
It means that they create this like sheath-like structure. So it's not a single cell.
Okay, cool. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. No, totally. That's fine. So it's a not like, so yeast would be, for example, which is a single cell organism, it versus a filamentous, where you have it's a multi-cell.
You were talking about what blows your mind about mycelium. What, when I rudely interrupted you?
No, you're totally fine. They're just so reactive to their environment and they have the ability to be quite plastic, meaning that there is to an extent a response to the environmental stimuli that is just very unique. So it's almost like, in some ways, for lack of a better word, almost like kind of like working with stem cells, which is that they're rather than having a very specific path that once they, that the kind of the, like in the formation of certain like bodies or of the, within the organism, rather than it just like, rather than like your cells, like once they've decided to be a liver, they are going to become a liver. In this case, the organism is kind of fluid enough where rather than it not being able to change path based upon external stimuli, it can kind of be like, well, you know what? Actually, instead of, you know, a fruiting body, I think I kind of want to go back and be vegetative mycelium instead, which is a really crass and like not very, I should say, it's not the best description. It's not like there's much more nuance to this, which is what makes it so fascinating, but provides this opportunity for kind of limitless potential when it comes to working with an organism and also trying to understand and interpret what is causing it to grow certain ways and what is also like when you think about this, not just as an organism, but also as a material, how you can entice the organism to grow one way versus another way, depending on the types of properties that you're looking to achieve.
So presuming that there isn't an ethical harm in exploiting mycelium for our purposes, let's say, you're growing it to replace, for example, leather from cows. So it takes a cow at least a year to grow before she's slaughtered for meat and for leather. How long does it take you to grow Mycoflex?
It takes us 9 days currently.
Aside from packaging, has Ecovative commercialized any other products?
One of the things that we actually did working with Bolt is we've taken a piece of a material, the mycelium textile, Mylo, and have brought that to pilot scale with the partner of Bolt. So it's not quite commercialized yet, but it's in the process of moving towards that.
I saw that you have offered grow-it-yourself kits where people can grow their own mycelium and that one person even grew her own mycelium wedding dress for only $40. We're getting married next month and I can't even imagine spending so little on a wedding dress. Can you tell us more about like that process, the grow-it-yourself kit?
Yeah, so it is a part of our composite platform. So you are taking substrate and mixing it with the inoculum, and you can grow it into any mold that you're interested in. So a mold meaning like a molded shape, and or even beyond that. I mean, what's wonderful about the GIY program is that I think it's really representative of the company, of what Ecovate's mission is that it's not just interested in making this material simply for a profit. It's also about educating people, and we want to make a difference in this world and like have a positive impact in this world. And I think part of that, like I believe what like Ecovate really stands for is helping to educate the public on mycelium and providing them with the material to be able to play and grow and collaborate with Ecovative or anyone else. It's just important in being able to put this material into other people's hands, because the more people that know about it, the more people that are able to touch it and feel it and grow with it, I think it's the better for opportunity to make real change in the material world.
So a lot of things to possibly use mycelium to help save the world, whether in the food or the clothing or the material space. It's really cool. So we really appreciate you taking time to chat with us about this, Jesse. Just winding down here, let me ask you, for anybody who's interested, maybe there's a young aspiring scientist out there who wants to maybe come work with you at Ecovative, or maybe they're thinking about starting their own company. What resources, whether books or videos or speeches or anything else, would you recommend for them to help them in their path?
So you mentioned one of them, which is Mycelium Running. I think it's a wonderful book to be able to really get into what all this fungi is about. There are a variety of TED Talks if you're ever interested in, say, like, you know, Evan, the CEO, or Gavin, his co-founder, given quite a few of those, which I'd say definitely are worth checking out personally. I know I enjoy them. For mycelium itself, there are a variety of books out there. I know Michael Pollan's put out a new book, which I find really fascinating. When it comes to the animal industry, the food industry, one of the books he wrote, which I love, is like The Omnivore's Dilemma, which I find really, really fascinating. I'd say that those are two great ways to find a little bit more about the company, but also just to find out a little bit more about mycelium itself.
Thanks for the resources. Lastly, we would love for you to tell us for what you're grateful for.
The people I get to work with and my life. I'm so, so grateful. I work with a really wonderful group of people who really care about what they do and are passionate about, I think, like the vision for what we can be able to take this, like the next level we can take this material to, as well as not just the people that I work with now, but the people that have worked here in the past. I think that when it comes to science, it's really standing on the shoulders of your predecessors. You know, no woman or person or man is an island. And so having the opportunity to work with collaborators and both current Ecovative and previous is just, it's a gift. It's a real gift, and constantly growing.
Well, with that, Jesse, we are really grateful to you for taking time to chat with us about what you are up to at Ecovative Design. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. It was wonderful. It was such a pleasure talking with the two of you.
All right, folks, thanks so much for listening to the show.
We hope you got a lot out of it and that you will show us some love. You can rate Business for Good as 5 stars on iTunes, support us on Patreon, and tell your friends interested in business, or really just in making the world a better place, about the show.
And we'd love to hear what you're thinking. Please feel free to contact us anytime via our website, businessforgoodpodcast.com.
And as always, we hope that you will be in the business of doing good.